Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org. That's right. It's time once again for Baptist Basics University. I'm Matthew Gage. This is lesson number 7 in our series Homiletics 101, An Introduction to Preaching. And in this, we will be covering simply the voice. Now, to a preacher, they're really next to spiritual matters, and even, I'd say, even mental matters in studying and preparation such. The key thing for a preacher to, the key tool for a preacher is his voice. I mean, you think about it, you know, a musician has an instrument, a painter has his brush, a sculptor will have his tools, a mechanic has, you know, his wrenches and sockets and various things. Well, for a preacher, the main tool that he's going to use is his voice, his in speaking. And the voice is a key element to preaching. I mean, you think about I've taken a very broad definition in the first few lessons. I know with preaching and saying that preaching is really, you know, anytime you're giving out the truth. But we've really focused more in on just, you know, an actual preaching like in a church service or something in this lesson. But you think about, you know, it is possible to write and to have great influence and get truth across. But when it comes to actually the act of preaching, it's done with the voice. And it's something that you need to take care of, especially if you want to have a career at preaching. You can harm your voice. You can basically ruin your voice if you do not take care of it. There is quite a bit of strain given on the voice and speaking, especially in preaching, if you're not careful. Just the strain of the speaking and bad habits and such can really harm it. And that's what we're going to cover in this lesson. We're going to talk about different things to do to care for your voice. And then we'll talk a little bit more about just the act of speaking in regards to preaching and a little bit of vocal technique and stuff that we'll talk a little bit about in the second part of the lesson. Now, really, the benefit we have nowadays is that with the aid of modern technology, you know, the voice can be projected. It can be recorded. It's not like it was, you know, 150 years ago. Think about it. Actually, I'll tell you what, let's go back. Think about the time of Christ. Where did Christ speak? It was in the open air. And if you've ever been in a situation where someone's tried to speak in the open air, I mean, or even if you try to do it, you're going to raise your voice. You're going to try to speak louder, just short of screaming sometimes, depending on who you're trying to speak with. I worked a couple of summers at a summer camp in West Virginia. And one of the things that the camp counselors began to do was carry around, you know, bullhorns, just because it saved the strain on their voice, because they would be, you know, yelling and, you know, giving instructions for a game or something. Well, you know, by the end of the week, they didn't have a voice and their voice was weak for the next week. And, you know, they were constantly battling losing their voices because of the strain that they had put under it. You know, using things like a bullhorn was a big help. Excuse me. When you go back into the art of building churches and church buildings and stuff, things have been done over the centuries to help carry the voice to the audience. In 200-300 years ago, they would build a sounding board above the pulpit that would kind of reflect the sound out towards the congregation. I never have really quite understood how that worked, but it was something that they did, and you can look up pictures. If you look up like colonial churches in America, they'll almost always have one hanging up there. You know, just the acoustics of the building, and you think about it, most churches were really not designed acoustically in mind. They're more designed just to get people in and have room. So, you know, a lot of times they're very poor for acoustics. Just inside just a normal church, carpet is horrible for carrying a voice. It just sucks in the sound. It doesn't reflect it. And I've heard of churches, but then here's the thing. If you have like a hardwood floor, then the sound reflects too much. And because not for the preacher, but for the audience, every time, you know, somebody drops a pencil, it's loud. Every time somebody takes a step, it's loud. So there's a little bit of a trade-off and balance in the design of churches today that, really with the use of modern technology, with microphones and speakers, sound systems, that, it really is a blessing to be a preacher nowadays. I've been listening to an audiobook recording of Spurgeon's autobiography, which isn't really an autobiography, but it's not the time for that. But just talking about the strain of preaching and his voice. And I mean, you think about it, he was preaching like in a concert hall to 10,000 people with no microphone, you know, just having to project his voice out. And if he did that a couple of times, just the physical strain he was under. And it was not just the act of preaching. It wasn't that he ran up and down a whole lot. He was very animated, especially as a young man. But it was just the strain of projecting your voice out to be heard with that massive throng. So, as I say, we have such a blessing nowadays that as far as the care for the voice, you know, we can be a little bit lax and lazy in regards to really taking good care of our voice and having good technique, because when you have a lapel mic or one of these headset mics or even just a pulpit mic, you know, you don't have to project your voice. You can whisper, and then they can crank up the sound system, and people can still hear you. So it is a big blessing to be living now. I've rambled about that. I just wanted to throw that in. Just historically speaking, we live in one of the best times to be a preacher, just for that simple fact. So let's look at, first of all, some things we can do to care for our voice. First off, let me explain kind of how the voice works. We breathe in air. They are stored in our lungs. Well, your lungs contract and force the air back up through your throat, through the larynx. Larynx. I think it's a larynx, isn't it? Like laryngitis, which is your vocal box. It's there in your throat. And basically, you have what some people call vocal cords, and it's actually spelled C-O-R-D-S, I found out. The more modern term is folds, but basically on either side of your larynx is a little piece of skin that vibrates as the air comes back through through your voice box. And that vibration is what makes sound. As I can breathe just... And you can hear the air moving, but when I'm actually speaking is when those vocal cords are vibrating. It's that sound. I'm controlling the vibration of my vocal cords. Now, that sound that we produce is then further modified through various things. One thing is controlling our vocal cords. That's how you know, control the pitch. A lot of that is just the controlling of the vocal cords themselves and tightening and loosening them. Now, also, as that sound comes up through our head, your nose, your mouth, your upper throat, all of those things affect how your voice sounds. Now, the one thing is, I don't want to get too overly technical in this just because I'm really kind of... understand some of it. I did take a few vocal lessons before, not just a handful, maybe half a dozen, but I know a little bit about proper singing and speaking technique. I've read a little bit. I've looked some stuff. I looked up quite a bit online just to cover all this stuff, some of the technical points. But there's all this stuff works together in producing tone. You've heard people talking through their nose. Well, that's that sound is too much modified, too much going through your nose. Properly speaking, your throat should be open. They say, you know, like you're putting an egg into it. And if you're really going to properly project your voice, you're using your diaphragm to force the air through. You're not moving your shoulders up and down. as you breathe and talk, but your diaphragm is forcing the air back, you know, from your lungs up through your throat, and your throat is not strained. It's not tight. You keep it very, very loose. And I say you keep your throat open, and it's very difficult to explain. The one great thing about the first part of this lesson is if you have questions, if you want to know more, if you'll just get on Google and search for care for a singing voice or, you know, voice exercises, there is a lot of stuff. Most of it pertains to singing, but it really, anything that applies to singing also will apply to speaking also, and the exercises and the care for your voice. But that's a good overview of just kind of how your voice works, how that sound is created, how it's modified, just to give you an idea of what's going on and when you speak. Now, what can we do to help that? What do we do to keep it working properly? First thing is you can exercise your voice. Just like going to the gym, you know, to work on your abs and get that six-pack abs, or, you know, or get your little big bulging biceps, you know, from lifting weights and, you know, doing exercises. Well, you can also strengthen your voice. Now, God has given everyone a unique voice. And some are blessed with better voices than others. Some do not have very strong voices, but every voice can be strengthened. And I'll tell you this, even I'll throw this story in. I know of a man, who's an evangelist up in Kentucky, that when he first surrendered to preach, he was very concerned because he had a very high voice. And he was in his late teens, far past, you know, the time his voice should have dropped. And prayed and said, God, you know, if you've called me to the ministry, you have to give me a voice, a better voice to do it. And now this man has this very deep, authoritative voice. The man, it's Lewis Arnold is his name. He's a longtime evangelist up around in, you know, the Lexington area there in Kentucky. So, I mean, God can still work a miracle too. I don't want to leave that out. But just because you have a very, what would be considered a very poor voice, does not mean you can learn to overcome it, that you can strengthen it. You can add power, add volume. You can stretch your vocal range. In fact, that's one of the best things you can do in exercising your voice, is just to stretch your range, because it keeps your vocal cords loose. Just like, you know, stretching, you see athletes stretch quite a bit, especially before they go out. But, to perform. But, you know, a lot of exercising deals with stretching, keeping those muscles loose. And doing that, stretching the vocal range is very important. Now, this works both ways. This is a little secret to this, is that, for instance, listen, I have a deep voice. When I sing bass. And, you know, when my voice began to change, I wasn't singing, I was taking vocal lessons. I was kind of concerned because the teacher was making me sing quite a bit higher than what I'm used to. And he told me, he said, when you stretch your vocal range, even if you're stretching it higher, because you're stretching out those vocal cords and making them more loose, not only are you stretching your vocal range higher, you're also stretching it lower. So you're actually kind of attacking both ends when you're stretching out your vocal range. So that's just a good little tip there. So don't be concerned, you know, like, well, I have to deepen my voice, so I have to only stretch it way down low. No, you can also stretch it out by going high, and you have the same effect. It really, you know, it's not completely I want to say equal. You know, if you're stretching it higher, it's equally stretching it lower at the same time. But you do actually get benefit to both ends of your vocal range, and that also helps affect the quality of your voice and helps reduce strain when speaking. Another thing to do that's important is just use your voice, sing and speak often. Singing is great. That's one of the best ways to exercise your voice, keeping it in your range. That's very important. Don't strain your voice, but just using your voice is one of the best things you can do. If you want to be a preacher, talk quite a bit, sing, do things like that. Use your voice, and that'll help you. Not just when you get up to preach, but throughout the week. And warming up is very important too. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Now, it's also very important that you you avoid straining your voice. Now, that can be done a number of ways, just in volume. You think about, you may have done it. You've seen people do it. They go to a sporting event and they're hooping and hollering and rooting for their team. And they come back and they can barely talk because they've blown out their voice and yelling and screaming at the game. Well, that's because they strain their voice with all the yelling because of the volume. That's one way of straining your voice. Another way is also in with the vocal range. I read a book about a gospel group, the Inspirations, the Southern Gospel Quartet, and their longtime tenor is a guy named Archie Watkins. He actually just retired from them a couple years ago, but they talked about how it really was a very interesting book for me to read because they talked about the care they took for their voices and different things, and they talked about how they were very careful to make sure that the songs that they sang actually fit their vocal ranges, and said that for a year or two they really stretched Archie's voice singing tenor a little too much, and he started having vocal problems because they were just had a couple of songs that stretched him a little too much. So you have to be careful about straining your voice. You can do permanent damage to your voice over a long period of time of straining it. It doesn't mean if you lose your voice because you went to youth camp and you were doing a bunch of hooping and hollering in competitions. That doesn't mean, 20 years down the road, you're not going to be able to speak. But if you were doing that week in, week out, you are going to have vocal problems. A lot of preachers in years past have really harmed their voice to the point they could not even preach because of that strain of preaching. Now, let's say nowadays, because of modern electronics and modern equipment, that's not as big of an issue. But most guys still, I'm going to say most, I don't want to over-exaggerate, but there's still people out there that don't take advantage of the electronics and will still get up there and strain their voice in their preaching. And yelling does not equal preaching. I think I've said that before. You can get your point across without screaming. And those guys that get up there and scream and yell, not only are they really not preaching very effectively, in my opinion, they're also doing great harm to their voices. And you're not going to be preaching for 40 or 50 years if you do that week in and week out. Now, there's a lot of techniques you can use. If you get online, I thought about typing some out here, but for the sake of space, I didn't want to do that. Get online, look up vocal exercises, and you will find a bunch of these with audio clips and different things to do. Let me see if I can remember a couple. One of them that I remember being told was a deal called, they called it Ding Dong King Kong. And basically you worked your way down in your vocal range by going Ding Dong King Kong, Ding Dong King Kong, Ding Dong King Kong, Ding Dong King Kong, and working your voice down and stretching it out. That O sound really opens up the voice quite a bit, and that just kind of helps stretch out your range working your way down. Doing like an arpeggio kind of thing, do 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 do. You can do things like that, and just work it up or even work it down. And just, kind of musically speaking, just raise it a step each time. And doing that, just doing little things like that. Now, if you're doing this to warm up, which is a great thing to do if you're going to preach, warm up your voice a little bit. Singing is probably enough. In fact, we're going to get to that later. I forgot. I actually have that a little bit later. But if you're warming up, don't strain your voice. But if you're exercising your voice, it's okay to strain it a little bit. Just don't overdo it. If you feel yourself getting hoarse, just back off. But as I say, just get online and look up. If you'll Google vocal exercises or singing exercises, there's a lot of good stuff out there. There's plenty of videos and examples and audio clips that you can follow. Now, I'll tell you this, as far as vocal exercises, a lot of books on preaching will recommend them. They'll give you examples. I have heard of very few preachers that do this on a weekly basis. But early on is a great idea to do. If it's a habit you can get into, it will help you maintain and have a good voice and help you have a good quality voice when you preach. But, you know, a lot of times by the time the voice matures, which takes to your, you know, 30, 40 years old in a lot of cases, you know, by that time, a lot of people don't seem to feel the necessity of exercising the voice as much. Now, that's to their loss, because exercising the voice is a good thing to do. I'm just telling you, don't let me back up a step. Because I'm telling you this does not mean that every preacher does it. Every preacher probably should do it, but the vast majority of preachers that I'm aware of do not do anything as far as exercising their voice. Other than perhaps doing some singing and stuff and just the use of their voice, but they don't do the vocal exercises. And I am very bad. I don't do this kind of stuff, but I don't necessarily have to preach very often. But if you find yourself having trouble, you get done preaching and your voice is very hoarse or weak, doing these exercises will be a big help to you. If you see you're straining your voice, back off, and start doing some of these vocal exercises, and you can strengthen your voice and you can reduce a lot of that strain and really prolong your preaching career by taking good care of your voice. All right, now let's look at some things we can do to care for our voice. And a lot of this is just, and this is another thing you want to get online. If you look up vocal care, or, you know, singing voice care, stuff like that, If you'll Google that, you'll find tons of advice. Actually, most of this right here, I got off of list. I looked at a number of websites and kind of compiled and simplified a very simple list of things here and of things that you can do to help your voice. Now, first of all, there are foods to avoid, and I'm saying, not that you have to avoid these things completely, but especially just prior to preaching. First of all is cold food and drinks. What anything cold will do, it just kind of constricts and tightens your voice, and it'll produce strain. It reduces your vocal range. I know it's very tempting to go by the water fountain to get a cold drink of water, have a glass of ice water. And that's funny to me that so many cases, so many churches, it's a bottle of ice water there, or a can of ice water, a glass of ice water there, because that is one of the worst things you can do for your voice. I notice a number of preachers now will have a bottle of water there that's room temperature. That is much, much, much better. Another thing to avoid is dairy foods. These also kind of stimulate the mucus in your throat and make it very difficult to sing. So cheese, milk, stuff like that, it's a very good idea to avoid those. Now, especially the double whammy of something like ice cream, because it's cold and it is dairy, it is just murder on your voice. I mean, it takes you a while to kind of get your voice back 100% after eating ice cream. Sodas, really anything sweet's not very good. It's kind of sticky. But sodas, especially with caffeine, are not good. You know, they're very probably cold. That's not good. They're sweet. That's not good. The caffeine, and I don't remember all the technical reasons on this, but it tends to like dry out your throat. So it's not a great idea. And I know if you're a college kid or something, you live on Mountain Dew and live on caffeine. But I'm just telling you, proper advice, proper care of your voice, that is something to avoid, especially, you know, I'd say a few hours before you preach, I would try to avoid these type of things. And the last thing I'd say to avoid, just in this simple list, and I say you can find a list of 30 different things. This is just very basic stuff. The last thing we'll look at is eating nuts or something along those lines that stick in your mouth. I love nuts. I love peanuts. I love honey roasted peanuts. I love salted peanuts. And, you know, you go to the gas station, they've got those, you know, little deals that are 2 for $1, and you get them and you eat them. But it's funny, it's like 2 and 3 hours later, I'm still feeling little pieces of peanuts in my mouth. I'm sure you know what I mean if you've ate those before. Well, if you, that's kind of embarrassing, not very proper even, you know, to be up there preaching and you're using your mouth and that little piece of peanuts works its way loose and, you know, it's, what do you do? Do you swallow it? Do you spit it out? It's very awkward. It's best just to avoid that type of stuff before you go to preach. Another thing to be careful of is medications. A lot of things will dry out your mouth and throat. Antihistamines, you know, like allergy medications will do this. Decongestants will do this because those really are like drying out your sinus passage and stuff. Vitamin C is another one, and I wasn't aware of this, but vitamin C will have that same effect. It'll dry out your mouth. For your voice to be at its best, everything has to be moist, and anything that dries it out is going to affect your voice. It's going to lead to more strain. Now, you've seen there's a number of different throat sprays out there. And I know we usually have some, I can't remember what you call it, but like for a sore throat and you spray it in the back of your throat and it'll kind of numb it. That is very bad from a speaking, singing standpoint because it dries out your throat and also it numbs it. And so you don't really feel the strain as much. And that's a very dangerous condition to be in, is, you know, as far as caring for your voice. So I'd avoid pretty much anything along those lines before I was preaching, unless I'm just absolutely desperate, just trying to get my voice to work. And there's actually better things to do. If you'll look that up, there's some different things you can do that will help you. But as a general rule, avoid throat sprays, cough drops even, mints. Mints aren't too terribly bad, but just be careful, really. Anything putting in your mouth before you preach is not a very good idea if you can help it. Now, and as far as cough drops go, there's some kinds that are good and will help you and some that will do quite a bit of harm. And if you'll just go in and research, you'll find a list of things that they recommend that will actually help your throat when speaking, and the ones that will just tighten it up or dry it out. And not all cough drops are created equal from this standpoint. So I keep everything short and keep everything flowing. I don't have a list prepared, but if you look that up, you'll see the different singing and speaking websites talk about that. Third thing is you want to avoid allergens, dust, smoke, things like that. Smoke gets me, I'll tell you. And I have seasonal allergies also. You know, spring and fall are usually, you know, I'll have some rough stretches, but smoke is a big one, whether it's you know, wood smoke or cigarette smoke. That just kills my throat. So if you can avoid this type of stuff before you preach, if you know you react to it, if you know it harms you, stay away from it as best you can before you preach. Now, here's a few things that will help your voice. Warm food and drink, such as like hot tea, that's very good. It helps to loosen your voice, loosen your vocal cords and your throat. Helps keep it moist. It doesn't dry it out. That's a very good thing to do, especially a hot drink. They'll tell you hot tea is with honey or lemon, stuff like that is just is fantastic for your voice. If you're having trouble, if you've got a cold or something, hot tea is one of the best things you can go for. Humidifiers, as I say, keeping everything moist in your voice is very, very important. So, especially winter times of year, your heating inside your home or office is drying out the air. It's scary when you actually go into looking at the amount of moisture that a heater will suck out of the air. And it's basic physics and, you know, stuff why that happens. But keep a good humidifier around. You know, try to keep there to be a good level of humidity in the room. Now, that's kind of hard to do in a large, like, auditorium, but I'll say in your home, especially in your bedroom when you're sleeping, you think, you know, for 8 hours there, make sure you're breathing good humid air. you know, if in your office may not be a bad thing too, to have a humidifier around. And one of the best things you can do is just plain old water. Now, I'll say cold water or ice cold water is not good. Cool water is not great. And you may not like, you know, room temperature water or even warm water, but try to keep it close to room temperature. And that's one of the best things, because it's very just straight room temperature water is not going to harm your voice. It's just going to help moisturize it, and it's not going to affect it. It's one of the best things you can do. In fact, if you're going to have a drink and you're worried about the care for your voice, hot tea and stuff is probably best, but that's not always available. But a bottle of water is one of the best things you can have around. And a few things that will hurt your voice. Clearing your throat, though. I'm trying not to blow out your eardrums. I'm trying to turn my head when I do that. Doing things like that. Now, you've seen the people do that in the movies. You know, they get up to speak and they'll cough. They'll clear their throat before they speak. That's actually very bad. That is a lot of strain. Coughing and clearing your throat is some of the worst strain you put on, because your voice is constricting. You feel your throat constrict up, because what that mechanism is designed to do, and clearing, I'm going to combine clearing your throat and coughing here to describe this, but it's designed to remove stuff out of your throat. So your voice is constricting. You're forcing a lot of air through there to dislodge, you know, mucus or something that's in your throat. Well, that works good to get stuff out of your throat, but it is murder on your throat. You're drying it out. You're straining it. Not a good idea. So when you get up to preach or get up to speak, clearing your throat is a very bad idea. Now, it's better to get the stuff out of your throat than try to speak with it. And, you know, if you got sinus drainage or something and you have to do it, that's fine. But don't feel like you have to, you know, do that to speak. I got a little bit ahead of myself, but coughing is another thing. For the same reasons, it'll strain your voice. You know, if you've developed some type of a chest cold and you have a pretty bad cough, go get some medication for it. If you're going to be trying to do any preaching, because it's funny with a cough, the more you're up there trying to speak, the worse it seems to get. And as a side note there, if you're not in any shape to preach, don't force yourself to get up there. If you cannot speak loud enough to be heard, or, you know, you're struggling with coughing or something like that, and it's a huge distraction, get somebody else to preach, because you're really not doing very much good. You're actually hindering getting the message across if you're straining. Also want to avoid straining your voice, like yelling, screaming, stuff like that. And I say even stretching your vocal range. If I try to talk like this all the time, you know, that tightens my throat up. It'll strain my voice. So before you preach, you know, don't go to the football game and yell and scream for your team. You know, if that really goes for a few days ahead of preaching, because it takes a couple days to get over that. So you need to avoid straining your voice. And also just general physical fatigue will affect your voice. One of the things I learned reading about the inspirations that they gave a lot of credit for being around, and a lot of their guys singing for, you know, years and decades, was that they tried to stay in good physical shape. That if they weren't singing, you know, they didn't just sit around the bus. They went and found a YMCA or something, and they'd play basketball and they worked out. Overall physical health will help you have a good, healthy voice. It's funny, you're probably like me. I know I'm not the only one, but if you for some reason don't get a lot of sleep, say you only get 3 or 4 hours sleep, one of the main things that happens is you lose your voice. Your voice gets really scratchy. So, get quite a bit of sleep, get some rest. Don't do a lot of physical exertion if you can help it. I'm not saying, you know, well, no wife, I'm sorry, we'll have to let that broken pipe just leak water all over the house because I'm preaching tomorrow and I cannot have any physical exertion. I'm not talking about that, but, going out and playing in a softball game, you know, on Saturday before you preach may not be the best course of action. You may ought to schedule chopping down that tree for another day if you can help it. So, you know, try to stay in good physical shape and avoid physical fatigue, and that will help your voice up quite a bit. And lastly, in our section here on caring for your voice, is warming up your voice. Now, there's a number of things that really go into like vocal exercises that you can do to help warm up your voice. Humming is one of the best. Just get your vocal cords vibrating. And if you'll do some of the different exercises like I was talking about, that's very good and helping you warm up your voice. Singing. That's one of the great things about in being in a church and preaching is, you know, you're going to have a song service there before you get up. That gives you a chance to sing and stretch your voice out a little bit and get it warmed up. That's one of the best things about preaching, as opposed to just plain old public speaking, is that you're going to have a song service. You'll get to sing, and that helps you warm up. In fact, I found most of the time that's enough. If I go in really kind of worried about my voice because of allergies or something, usually I just will try to sing. Now, don't strain if the song gets high. Don't strain your voice. And if you feel your voice straining just to sing, you know, back off, don't do it. But that right there is a great thing you can do to warm up your voice. And lastly, I say the different types of vocal exercises, the you know, whatever you do, do-do-do-do-do, or King Kong, ding-dong, whatever you do. And I say, if you look this up, there are dozens and probably hundreds of them online. Those type of things are great. And this is another case, if you want some good vocal exercises, get online, look it up, you know, for singing, like singing warm-up exercises, and there's a lot of good stuff, and all that stuff will help you. All right, so that covers just the general care of your voice, how it works, exercising, you know, things to avoid. Now, the second part of this, we're going to go into, this is more just some general speaking advice, kind of getting a little bit away technically from the voice, though we are going to deal about two of the 4 points we're going to cover with really do deal with your voice. These are actually just some old standby things that you'll see on different like public speaking websites. I've seen this outline before. I stumbled back across it and thought, wait, hey, you know, that's pretty good. So, these are 4 things more to consider when you're speaking, when you're preaching. And as I said, these also actually 2 of these are directly deal with your voice. One of them pertains to it kind of, and the last one really not really. But anyway, the 4 P's. The first of which is pace. Now, when you're speaking, you want to keep a fairly steady conversational pace. The pace is the heart rate of a sermon. It needs to be pretty steady. If you get excited, you can speed it up. If it gets calm, you can slow it down, just like your heart rate would. And be careful not to be too fast or too slow. As a conversational tone is probably what's best. If you race through things, people may miss something. If you go too slow, people will go to sleep. Or, you know, it's hard to follow. So have that variated some. As I say, we'll talk a little bit, you know, one of the dangers of being monotone and just staying on the same pitch every time, every word is exactly the same. Well, you can get the same thing with pace, and that's not a good thing, where everything is on the same pace and we do not variate from it. You know, there's something about the brain. It picks up pattern, and for a while it's interested in pattern. But when the pattern variates is when the brain really starts to kick in and pay attention. And that goes for, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, vocal pitch, but as far as pace goes too, that's another thing that's very important in variating it. Now, it is best to slow down when you're going through key statements. You know, don't just fly through things that are important. If you have something important to say, slow down, say it very precisely, and repeat it. Make sure people get it. And that's one of the most important things about pace is, you know, you can speed through and hurry through and tell the story about David and Goliath because people are pretty familiar with it. But when you really get down to making your application on it, you know, it's probably best to slow down a little bit so people make sure, you know, people understand what's being said and are catching every word. The second P is pitch. And this does deal with the voice, and we're going to go into a couple different areas of pitch. There's actually quite a few you can go into if you get into, you know, looking at the singing and stuff aspect of it. The first thing is modulation. Now, this is shifting your pitch and tone. This is, for instance, like on a piano, this is a pitch. Every key is a different pitch. That's the best way to describe it to understand what this is. I can press middle C, that's one pitch. I can hit the D right above it, and that's a different pitch. It's higher. I can hit the B right below it, and that's a different pitch. And I can hit one all the way on this end and one on that other end on the piano, and those are two different pitches. You need to have modulation. So this is where you get in danger of being monotone, and you will put people to sleep if you don't have enough modulation. It really turns out to be very soothing to the mind. It really put the mind to sleep if you're not variating in your voice. Now, let me see if I can kind of illustrate this for you. Let's use John 3:16. Now, monotone be, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life." Now, that's pretty much monotone. It's very computer sounding. Now, we can also overdo modulation. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever should," you know, and be all over the place. That doesn't work either. That has the opposite effect. It turns people off. When you're speaking, and this really kind of is a gift, and some of it comes with practice, but think about it as having a melody, as singing to it. It needs to have a nice rhythm and flow to the pitch that's used when you're speaking. So it'd be, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life." Now, that was overacted, I know, but I hope you can pick up what I'm doing there, is that I've got kind of rising and falling with the flow of the words. I say don't overdo modulation, but you have to have it. It needs to be there. Listen to yourself speak. Listen to a gifted preacher speak, or just a gifted speaker, even if you want to even go out even further. Listen to some of the past presidents that were great speech makers, and you'll see what they're doing and how they have a flow to their words. It's very difficult to do for a lot of preachers because, you know, we're kind of speaking off the cuff, extemporaneously. Well, we've got an outline, but it's not like we're reading. It's not like we know exactly what we're saying. It's not all written out and rehearsed. So it's, you know, there's going to be some errors made in modulation just because it is kind of flying by the seat of your pants. But that it really is no excuse not to try to do a good job at it. And most of the time, most people do a great job just in conversational style speech. They overdo it when they are really trying to speak. They go into an overacting mode, and it's funny. People that just speaking with conversationally have sound great, but the minute they're trying to read a poem or read a speech before a class or an audience, they will start to overmodulate. They'll try to be overdramatic, and as far as preaching goes, some people tell you to yell and holler, you know, and go at it like a fireball. If you can keep it pretty conversational, you're actually probably going to do a better job at getting your message across and being more confident at what you're doing. The second thing we'll look at is called inflection. Now, inflection is pitch changes within words or even phrases. This is the difference between me saying right and right. One was a declaration, one was a question. Now, you can pick up on that just by hearing. You know, I actually have write and write typed out in the notes. Now, it's very obvious when you're looking at them in the notes because one has a question mark, one has a period. Wow, that's very obvious. But when I'm speaking, I have to make sure I'm saying the right thing. I could say, Abraham Lincoln was the 16th president. Now, that is a declarative statement. You know, you understand. I am telling you Abraham Lincoln was the 16th president. Now, I could, if I made a mistake in my inflection, it would be Abraham Lincoln was the 16th president? Raising up your inflection there at the end of the sentence turns it into a question. That's just general conversation and communication there. Also, it goes into confidence. I could say, Jesus is the only way to heaven. And that's a very declarative statement, but I can say, Jesus is the only way to heaven. And I don't sound quite as sure of myself. You need to make sure inflection matches the mood of what's being said and matches the right sentence structure. You know, most people are not going to make the mistake of turning a statement into a question, but they will make the mistake of, how shall I put it? Given the wrong impression with a statement, you know, not having enough confidence, not putting enough confidence in a word or phrase, or putting too much into it. It's funny. I'm guilty of this too. Sometimes I'll say something that's purely opinion, but the way that I say it with the inflection, it may sound like the most confident thing I said all night. That's not what I was trying to do, but it was just a mistake I made in how I said it. And a lot of that goes into the inflection you put into it. And also, not only, and this is a big problem nowadays in public speaking. Like I told you, you know, when we make a question, we raise up the inflection there at the end of the sentence. There actually is a very bad habit a lot of people have, just who are not trained at public speaking, that they will do the same type of thing when they're speaking. They'll start out in a very good tone, but because they're nervous or actually, a lot of it just goes back to nervous or untrained. What they'll do is, as they are speaking, they'll rise it up at the end of the sentence. So it would, how can I illustrate that? I'll say, you know, Jesus is the only way to heaven. Now, if I'm going to say that preaching, you know, Jesus is the only way to heaven. And I drop it down there at the end, and you know that's the end of the sentence. But a lot of people would say, see if I can even do this. I hope I can. Jesus is the only way to heaven, and rising up. Now, I did kind of drop it down there at the very end, you know, so it doesn't sound like a question, like Jesus is the only way to heaven, but Jesus is the only way to heaven. For one thing, it is quite annoying. If you have somebody doing that a whole lot, it gets very, 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 very annoying. And it loses effect, and it has like a monotone type effect because it's that same thing repeated over and over and over. So that's something to avoid. The best thing you can do, it's so hard. So much of this is just so hard to explain. I can introduce you to the concept, and I can tell you, make sure you're doing this, but don't overdo it. And that's just, I keep running into that same deal. I hope you understand what I'm speaking about. If you listen to a sermon, I hope you can pick up people doing that. I hope you realize yourself what you're doing. Things like modulation and inflection are very, very important. And it's the art of, it's not just what we're saying, it's the art of how we are saying it. And it's one of the most important things that a preacher can do, is make sure what he is saying is right, but how he is saying it is also right. All right, so moving on then to our third of the four P's is power. Power, when speaking, goes a lot into, the simplest way to describe it is just the volume, but it's not yelling. It's got depth to it. So it's not just, the thing is, when you yell, you're going to raise the pitch of your voice. Power when you speak is volume, but it also is depth to your voice. volume when preaching should be loud enough to be heard, but not overpowering. And listen, one of my pet peeves and one of the worst things that we are teaching our young preachers today is that they have to yell and scream when they preach. Nothing can be further from the truth. And yes, I know you can go back there and you can show some verses. You can show me the verse was Isaiah or Jeremiah. I can't remember exactly where that says, raise your voice like a trumpet. That was great for a prophet. And in some cases, when you're preaching, you need to throw a fit and you may need to raise your voice and you may need to hoop and holler and scream. But preaching does not equal yelling and screaming. I heard a preacher once. And the guy was probably in his 50s or 60s, had been preaching 20, 30 years. He would get up, he would open his Bible, say, you know, tell a few jokes or something, kind of get started, tell by himself. He'd read the scripture, and then immediately when he was done, he would just start yelling. And there was no point for it. And he yelled basically at the same volume for 30 minutes. And about the same pace, no variation at all to it. And you know what kind of effect it had? Very little. Now, there's so much danger when it comes to preaching, when in overdoing it, and overdoing it with volume is very, very easy to do. People do not like to be yelled at. I don't know about you, but I don't like being yelled at. Somebody that yells at me, I immediately put up walls between me and them. I think, who is this guy? You know, I'm not Gomer Pyle. He's not Sergeant Carter. He has no right to be yelling at me. A preacher who feels like he has to yell is honestly taking on some abusive views of his own power. Because show me where a shepherd yells at his sheep. Now, it doesn't mean a shepherd doesn't get rough sometimes, and I know all that, but that is sometimes. That's not a general rule. This is one of my pet peeves, and what's bad is we are getting our young preachers up there, and we're glorifying, in some cases, preachers who are, quite frankly, idiots. And listen, there is a style of preaching that appeals to the flesh. That may sound completely strange. I'm not the only person who's come to that conclusion. A lot of this, I don't want to call it like a camp meeting, so I don't want to make camp meeting preachers all sound bad because they're not. But there is a certain style of preaching, this in your face, yell and scream, get as close as we can to being off color without actually crossing the line. That stuff has no place in the pulpit. That's not glorifying to Christ. In fact, every time I've seen that, I've thought, boy, that preacher's trying to impress somebody. He's trying to show everybody how mean he is. He's trying to impress them with how close he can walk that line without actually crossing over and being improper. We got to quit doing that. We've got to set a better example for our young people. I've seen, you know, preacher boy contest, which that's great. I have no problem at all with them. But the kids that get the hooping and hollering and amen, or the kids that get up there and yell and scream, they don't even have a good point. But because they yell and scream or use some cute, stupid little outline that they robbed from somebody else, you know, everybody thinks, wow, boy, that guy's going to be a great preacher. No, yelling and screaming does not equal preaching. There is so much more to being a preacher. And like I say, the guys who do that all the time, I tune them out. I turn them off. I have little respect for a preacher that all he does is yell. There's so much more in the Bible that talks about reaching people through kindness, through teaching. Can you imagine? This thing about, can you imagine, go back and put yourself back in your algebra class. Can you imagine the teacher getting up there? I'm telling you X equals 1 because I told you so. And you think, wow, well, that that's out of place. You know, you can just tell me, hey, X equals one and show me on the board. Preaching is a lot the same way. I can tell you that Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven without saying, bless God, Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven! And completely overdoing it. Hope I didn't blow out your eardrums. That kind of looks kind of rough there on the screen. This makes me sick. We have set such a bad example for our young preachers. And they're not going to reach people. This modern generation does not listen to people that yell. You are going to reach them through, honestly, more through calmness, kindness, reason than you ever will by throwing your weight around and yelling and screaming. Now, the proper use of power when preaching, it needs to fit the subject. It needs to fit the topic. And there are times during a sermon, doesn't mean like I'm looking for every sermon I preach is a time I need to raise my voice, but there are times where it can be used with tremendous effect. But that doesn't mean I'm throwing a fit. That doesn't mean I'm putting people down. It just means that power is a trump card that I have, that when I really want to get a point across, I'm going to play that trump card, and people are going to pay attention and think, whoa, where did this come from? Wow, that must be important if he spoke like that. I am an admirer of the preaching style of Adrian Rogers, the late Adrian Rogers that was pastor at Bellevue Baptist in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm just telling you, as far as homiletically sound preaching goes, the man was a textbook on preaching every time he spoke. If you get his tapes, download his sermons off the internet, you know, tapes, get his CDs. You know, I'm still old fashioned, I guess. I still think of sermon tapes, but listen to his sermons. He rarely ever raises his voice. And when he does, it's to great effect. It really pushes and drives the point. He's not forcing the point. He's merely enhancing it. And there's a number of other good preachers around that do this, that they know when to raise their voice, and they know when it's time to, to even throw a fit in the pulpit, which really, there's really not a time to do that, to be quite frankly. Now, there's times to take a stand, but throw a fit and throw a temper tantrum, that has no place in the pulpit either. But there's a lot of great preachers today that are the same way. Where I went to school, Brother Jeff Fugit is tremendous at this. And when he raises his voice, you know it's something important, and you know he is driving a point home, and he does not yell and scream the whole time. Now, that may float your boat, and you may get a big blessing out of that. I don't, and a lot of other people don't. I can't tell you how many times, an evangelist or somebody had come through, and, the response that I would pick up on over the next few days would be people just, Joe and Sally churchgoer, just regular church members, the reaction that they would have to him would be, I really felt like he was putting me down, just yelling and screaming at me. It really, he has no right to be up there yelling and screaming at me. What have I ever done to him? What did I do wrong? The yelling and screaming turns people off. Now, a lot of this point, I know I've been chasing a rabbit, but I think it's very important today. If you're in an independent fundamental Baptist church, you have seen preachers do it. I'm not going to say you may have. You have seen preachers do it. And you have heard preachers do it. And you know preachers out there that do it. And you know people that love them and eat them up and will listen to their sermons and just get the biggest kick out of, this in-your-face style of preaching. But let me tell you something. It's not very effective at reaching people at all. So, power is great. using volume, using a lot of volume, is great when done properly. And listen, you know, a lot of independent fundamental Baptist churches, there's too much yelling. And I'll tell you this, from what I've heard in some other Baptist groups, like a lot of Southern Baptist groups, I think they're up there being too kind. And they're so careful not to raise their voice, you know, to not offend or for whatever reason, that they really come across as too weak. Like they're not really taking a very strong stance. Power when you're speaking is a great, great tool, and it's one that should be used, but needs to be used in moderation and honestly with careful skill and planning. All right, our last point, as we passed the hour mark a little while ago, is pauses. And this will go in more, this one has very little to do with your voice, this is just a speaking technique. Pauses are natural and expected when we're speaking between sentences. Fourscore and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now, I put proper pauses for punctuation there. Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill came tumbling after. Okay, now, just in that little, you know, children's verse, we're using proper placement of pauses for commas. To split it up so you hear the rhyme, you hear the flow. I could say, Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water, Jack fell down, broke his crown, and Jill came tumbling after. And it all just blows together, and you think, okay, well, that's a silly story, it makes no sense. But when you put the pause in there and you pick up on the rhymes and the flow, it makes so much more sense. At the end of a sentence, there ought to be a pause. At the end of a thought, there ought to be a pause. At the end of a paragraph, if you're writing out your sermon, end of a paragraph, there ought to be a pause. So pauses are a very natural thing that ought to be there when we're speaking. Think of them as punctuation, a vocal punctuation, I guess. You know, where in between a sentence, you're going to pause for a second or two. You know, where there would be a comma, you're going to pause for a second or two. A good way to illustrate it, I think, is to think of it as pauses are like rests in music. Now, when singing, like out of a hymn book or something, there's not a lot of rest in there. But when you get to playing an instrumental, or if you look at like an arrangement for an orchestra, there's going to be pauses in there. You know, the trombone is not going to be playing a note, you know, on every beat of every measure throughout the whole song. They may actually take a break and not, play a note for a sizable period for a certain movement of the song. I played band, and there were times, you know, I'd be sitting over there with my tuba and just basically could put it up for, you know, a minute because I didn't play. It was this little woodwind section thing that was playing at the time. So, but pauses ought to be there. And they're going to be there. You know, your sermon shouldn't just be one continuous run-on sentence. The danger with pauses is twofold. Like everything else we keep talking about, you either overuse it or you underuse it. Underusing it makes everything to be a very long run-on, and it's like a machine gun fire delivery. It never stops, and you don't you can't catch where one point ends and another one ends. This really, really, for someone who's very nervous and speaking very fast, that is a danger. But that's not the worst or probably the most common thing or danger with pauses. The biggest danger with pauses comes from using them or from using them at the wrong time or too long. So let's go back and we'll look at John 3:16 again. I could, if I put pauses in the wrong place, I interrupt the flow. I could say, for God so loved the world that he gave his, only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth on him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. Okay, that's very bad overdramatic, but the pauses do not fit with the flow. They're in very bad places. They don't fit the sentence structure of the verse. It comes across as annoying. You sound like William Shatner trying to speak. It's very unnatural. It's very foreign, almost an alien type sounding rhythm to it. That's one case in where pauses are very dangerous. The other thing is just in having a lapse of time where you're not saying anything, where you could have an overly dramatic pause. We could say, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son." Okay, now I'm not going to keep going because that's annoying, and all I'm doing is listening to my clock tick behind me. But in that case, there's pauses kind of where there ought to be, but they're way too long. This is if you think of the caricature of of the overly dramatic, you know, Shakespearean actor, this is what they do. You know, to be or not to be. You know, the pauses are long. They don't really fit with the flow. It's you know, that's the danger most of the time people get into with pauses. Now, how do you avoid that? Part of it is just keeping a good rhythm, keeping good flow, having a good knowledge of what's going on. So you're not having to stop and think, oh, what am I going to say next? A lot of it goes into preparation, having good notes, being comfortable with the subject you're speaking about. But a lot of it's just watching out for it. Now, a danger that comes with overreacting to pauses is feeling like you have to be making noise at all the time. This is where you get into saying things like while you're speaking. Be like, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son." All right, I said the same thing, but with all these extra little sounds there. And while I was making noise, it was annoying. It wasn't driving the point. It wasn't carrying the theme. It wasn't doing anything but just making me sound like I didn't know what I was saying. Saying things, and I have a very bad habit of saying all the time. And it's funny, if you listen to people who are not accustomed to public speaking, this is one of the things that they'll fall into. If you listen to it specifically, it's funny, if you listen to athletes being interviewed, they'll fall into this trap many, many times because they're just not used to public speaking. But don't feel like you have to be making noise all the time. Because it does. It comes off as annoying. And I say that's one of my biggest problems I feel myself when it comes to preaching, is that I say a whole lot. And I've noticed it a bunch of times since I just mentioned it. So, but having these dramatic pauses, these long breaks, is very dangerous. Now, a pause can have great effect. If you follow up, you make a statement and you want it to kind of sink in. Say Jesus is the only way to heaven. And if you pause for a couple seconds after that, just because that's the point you're really trying to drive home. You want people to get that. That pause kind of gives people to stop and think and say, okay, well, whatever he said, he's wanting me to think about it. He's wanting it to sink in. So using that is very tremendous. I mean, if you've got a key statement, or you've got a tremendous application you're trying to use, having a little pause at the end of it is a good thing. And if you know, I know, like I kind of did when just in the previous point, we're talking about using power when we preach, and I was ranting and raving about people yelling when they preach. I did the same thing, kind of for an effect, if you go back and listen to that, because I wanted it to sink in that I do not like it when people get up there and just yell and scream when they preach. So I took time to pause and let you know that I don't like it. And then those extra little pauses and changing up the rhythm just adds more emphasis to what's being said. So pauses are good and they need to be there. Your sermon is not one continuous run-on sentence, but don't have big ones and make sure they're in the right places. Okay, it's just think about it. We've talked about the pace and rhythm of your sermon being like the heartbeat. Well, at any given moment, your heart is not beating. You know, that there's space and time in between the movement in those chambers in your heart. And when you don't use good pauses, it's like having an irregular heartbeat to your sermon. You know, it's still alive, it's still there, but it's not good. There's something wrong, and it, you know, you're just as an irregular heartbeat will make a person sick, an irregular heart, a regular rhythm, and having bad placement of pauses and such makes your sermon kind of sick and does not allow it to be effective. It really harms it and slows it down. So that's the four P's: pace, pitch, power, and pauses. And so that's kind of a classic outline. Actually, the place it reminded me, I've seen it before, but the place I saw it actually was talking about like, I was like Toastmasters or something. It's like a public speaking kind of website that had that. But I think those are good things to keep in mind. And say we kind of maybe drifted a little bit on a couple of those from our overall topic in this lesson on the voice. But those are good things to keep in mind just stylistically when we're preaching, things we want to pay attention to. Make sure you've got a good pace, not overdoing it, not too fast, not too slow. Make sure that you are varying your pitch and your inflection is matching what's being said. Make sure the power is matching what you're said. And say the big danger there I harped on quite a bit is, you know, don't feel like you have to yell and scream the whole time. And also with pauses, and make sure that you're using those wisely, because when they're used properly, they're very effective. But if they're not, they're completely annoying. So there we go. That covers lesson number 7 on the voice. Really a lot more of a technical lesson, which I guess really the last few have been. But I think that's some good information that will help you, especially if you're a young preacher. Just give some thought. A lot of preachers, I don't think, give enough thought to their voice and caring for it. And you know, it's the instrument you have to preach, and you need to make sure it's strong and healthy and that you're using it properly. So there we go. That'll wrap up this lesson, number 7. I appreciate you listening. And next lesson, we will be have an entire lesson talking about how to preach to children, just some different things that I've learned, and really some good advice even when preaching to adults, just some good advice about keeping people's attention. But the main thrust of the lesson will be on how to preach to children and how to keep their attention. Well, once again, I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today. Check out BaptistBasics.org for other resources, and I'll catch you next time. I hope it's been a help and a blessing to you.